Reality Making 101. In the teachings of Mahayana Buddhism, it's believed that reality can only exist where our mind creates a focus. In fact, the teachings suggest that both the world of pure form and the world of the formless result from a form of consciousness that they call subjective imagination. While any experience certainly seems real enough to us, it's only where we focus our attention while we're having a feeling about the object of our focus that the possible reality becomes that real experience. Well, except for a slight variation in language, this ancient tradition sounds an awful lot like 20th century quantum theory. If all of the do's and the don'ts of quantum possibilities are true, and feeling is the key to choosing reality, then the question is, how do we feel as if something has happened when the person next to us stares us squarely in the face and says that it hasn't? Are we lying to ourselves, for example, if we say that the loved one is already healed while we're standing next to them in the intensive care unit of St. Someone's Hospital? Well, the irony of this question is that its very nature eludes any one single answer. In a universe of many possibilities, there are many possible answers. Somewhere among all of those alternate realities, there exists a scenario where our loved one's healing has already happened. Somewhere, there exists a reality where the disease never occurred. But for reasons that we may never know or understand, however, this is not the scenario that's been awakened. It's not the reality that's lying on the gurney in front of us. So the answer to our question boils down to what we believe about the world and our power to choose. The question then becomes this: which possibility do we choose? Which reality does our loved one or the nurse or the doctor choose? And to answer, we must first acknowledge that we have the power to even make such a choice. Just as Neville's story of the man and his near-fatal illness demonstrated, the present reality is not sealed in stone. It appears to be soft and malleable. It can change, even when it looks as if there is no reason for it to change. In Neville's story, the young man's doctors had made a diagnosis. In other words, they chose a reality with an expected outcome. Not knowing that he had a choice, the man initially believed the doctors and bought into their version of that reality. But it was only when Neville offered him another possibility, and the man accepted that possibility, that his body responded to his new belief, and he healed. Einstein made a famous statement that we cannot solve a problem while we're in the same level of thinking that created it. Similarly, we cannot change a reality if we remain in the same consciousness that created that reality. To lock in one of the many possibilities described by quantum theories of reality, we must first pinpoint one. We must choose. And we do so through the way we observe it, that is, the way we feel about that possibility in our lives. Once we recognize that we have a choice in terms of what we see as our reality, the next question that's commonly asked is how. How do we do it? How are we to see our loved ones as healed if their body appears diseased? The answer to how begins with our willingness to look beyond the illusion of what the world is showing us, and this is where the workshop of life really begins. It's where we're invited to put all of our knowing and all of our spiritual theories to the test. With illness in our loved ones, for example, we're invited to see beyond the cancer that they may have experienced and think of them as already healed and what it's like to be with them in this new reality. But to choose a new reality, we must do more than just think about the new way of being or just wish that the healing in our loved ones has already happened. And this, perhaps, is the greatest caution in this way of seeing the world and the one that can present the greatest pitfall as well. In our fear of losing the people, the places, the things that we hold most dear, there's a temptation, a very human temptation, to deal with the magnitude of the situation by denying the reality that stares us in the face and simply saying that we don't accept it. But unless we also take the actions that replace that frightening reality with one of healing, our non-acceptance is bound to produce little more than frustration and disappointment. I've personally experienced the loss of friends who did precisely this and are now no longer in this world today. although they're the only ones who will ever know really what happened in their hearts and minds before they passed. I had the opportunity to witness some of the struggle that they went through with their beliefs. If I'm such a powerful being, they would ask, then why do I still have this condition? If I've changed my beliefs, why haven't I healed? Well, this topic is deep, it's personal, it's sensitive. And the answer can often bring up strong feelings in discussions about what is and how the universe seems to work and where God fits in. But the bottom line is this. There's a fine and delicate line between simply choosing a new outcome and actually following through with the thoughts and feelings and beliefs that fully awaken that outcome as a new reality. And that difference is summarized as our key number 8 in understanding the divine matrix. To simply say that we choose a new reality is not enough. To choose a quantum possibility, we must become that way of being. As Neville suggests, we must abandon ourselves to the new possibility, and in our love for that state, live in the new state and no more in the old state. And that's precisely what the ancient instructions found in some of our most cherished traditions invite us to do. In these traditions, the technique for this human-to-divine interface is often called prayer. Speaking quantum, feeling is the key. Previously, we identified interpretations of why quantum weirdness seems to happen the way it does. In general, the theories suggest that the act of us simply observing matter seems to change that matter. While each theory varied as to why the particular effect is happening, they all seem to suggest the same common denominator. That link is us, and our role as observers in the world. When we observe something, that is when we consciously focus our attention in one place and time. It appears that we're locking one of the many quantum possibilities into place in that instant, and when we do so, that possibility becomes our reality because of us, because of our presence. While this appears to be revolutionary news to modern science, it's been accepted as the way things are in ancient traditions and indigenous cultures for centuries. In the words of times past, scribes, mystics, healers, and scholars did their very best to preserve this great secret of our relationship to the universe and to pass it on to us. Sometimes we find those traditions in the places we least expect to find such powerful wisdom. From the temple walls and tombs in the deserts of Egypt, for example, to the Gnostic wisdom of the ancient Nag Hammadi Library and the traditional medicine practiced today throughout the North American desert Southwest. The language that breathes life into the possibilities of our imagination, dreams, and prayers remains with us today. Perhaps the clearest example of this language is best described through the words of a man that lived in a monastery nearly 15,000 feet above sea level, high on the Tibetan plateau. In the spring of 1998, I had the opportunity of facilitating a combined research trip and pilgrimage into the highlands of central Tibet for 22 days. It was during that time with our group, we found ourselves immersed in some of the most magnificent, rugged, pristine, remote land remaining on the earth today. Along the way, we visited 12 monasteries, 2 nunneries, and some of the most beautiful humans you could ever imagine, including monks, nuns, nomads, pilgrims. It was during that time that I found myself face to face with the abbot of one of the monasteries and had the opportunity to ask the question that we'd traveled so far and for so long to ask. On an icy, high-altitude morning, our group found itself cramped into a tiny chapel surrounded by Buddhist altars and ancient tonkas. I focused my attention directly into the eyes of the timeless-looking man seated lotus-style in front of me. Through our translator, I'd just asked him the same question that I'd asked every monk and nun that we'd met throughout our pilgrimage. "When we see your prayers," I began, "what are you doing? When we see you tone and chant for 14 and 16 hours a day, when we see the bells, the bowls, the gongs, the chimes, the mudras, and the mantras on the outside, what's happening to you on the inside? I wanted to know." A powerful sensation rippled through my body as the translator shared the abbot's answer. The abbot simply said, "You've never seen our prayers, because a prayer cannot be seen." As he adjusted the heavy wool robes beneath his feet, the abbot continued. He said, "What you have seen is what we do to create the feeling in our bodies. The feeling is the prayer." How beautiful, I thought to myself, and how simple. Just as the late 20th century experiments had shown, it's human feeling and emotion that affects the stuff our world is made of, our inner language that changes the atoms, electrons, and photons of our outer world. It's less about the actual words that we speak, however, and more about the feeling that the words create within us, the feeling underlying the words. It's the language of feeling that speaks to the quantum forces of the universe. Feeling is the language the divine matrix recognizes, and key number 9 helps us to remember this. Key number 9 states, feeling is the language that speaks to the divine matrix. So to speak to the field in a meaningful way, feel as though your goal is already accomplished, as though your prayer is already answered. Now the abbot was telling us the same thing as the great scientist of the 20th century. Not only was he sharing the same ideas that the scientist had documented, but he was taking us one step further. The abbot was sharing the instructions that describe how we can speak the language of quantum possibilities, and he was doing it through a technique that we know today as a form of prayer. No wonder prayers work miracles. They put us in touch with the pure space where all things begin, where the miracles of our minds become the reality of our world.